Welcome to Citizens Climate Radio. In this podcast, we highlight people's stories, we celebrate your successes, and together we share strategies for talking about climate change. I'm your host, Peter Santoscano. Welcome to episode 12 of Citizens Climate Radio, a project of Citizens Climate Education. This episode is airing on Monday, May 22nd, 2017. I have to say I'm very excited about spring. My garden is planted, and daily I hover over it like a protective mother hen. I'm also excited about the upcoming Citizens Climate International Conference in Washington, D.C., June 11th and 12th. I look forward to meeting listeners. If you see me, please say hi and let me know how I can make this show better for you. At the conference, I will also lead a workshop, Climate Change and the Art of Storytelling. You can learn more about the conference by visiting citizensclimatelobby.org. In today's show, you will hear answers to our puzzler question about resources to help people who become concerned about climate change. I have many great resources to share with you, including some of the hottest climate-themed podcasts out there. In the Art House, Citizens Climate founder and director Marshall Saunders tells me about an inspiring book that he recommends climate advocates read. This late 19th century novel is not on the list of most climate resources, but it is packed with wisdom for our work today. But first, we talk about values. Our values shape us. They help us make decisions. They influence our relationships. They are often the guide in life that keeps us on the path we most desire. Organizations and movements are also guided by values. As climate advocates, we come to this work with our own set of values. These values have been influenced by many factors in our backgrounds. Our family, community, faith, life-changing experiences, and key relationships. Citizens Climate has compiled a list of core values for their volunteers. Some of these values grew up with the organization. Others have been intentional from the beginning. Recently, a group of staff and volunteers sat down to discuss the values that guide Citizens Climate Lobby and Citizens Climate Education. What helps strengthen the work we do? What values are most challenging for us? What values need to be more clearly defined? Joining me to discuss values is one of the volunteers who worked on the Citizens Climate core values. We chatted over Skype, so you might hear an occasional click or buzz. Meet Leslie Beatty. Professionally, Leslie comes from the world of marketing. While she has been involved with advertising campaigns, Leslie particularly enjoys market research.
I've always had a real soft spot for research, especially what's called primary research, which is talking to people, you know, interviews, focus groups, going to people's houses and seeing what their lives are like.
Chatting with the marketing person who is concerned about climate change, I had to ask Leslie about her thoughts on talking about climate change.
I feel like in climate change, it's probably the biggest marketing challenge out there. So it's not easy, right? Trying to get people to take action on something that's scary. I think the tendency in climate change is to rely too heavily on facts and feel like if you tell people how bad things are, that they will listen and decide to take action. And in fact, we know that's not the case. Not necessarily because they don't care or because they aren't worried about it. And in many cases, they are worried about it. It's really trying to understand how you can give them a path forward to taking action as opposed to just telling them that they should be worried.
Leslie is very passionate about pursuing climate solutions, but she admits that climate change was not always on her radar. Then two events in her life jarred her awake. After that, she became engaged.
I had my first child, and sort of in a similar time frame, I started working for a solar company And those two things really brought about kind of an awareness that I hadn't had before. I think for me, having kids really made me vulnerable to it in a way that I hadn't felt before. Like, I felt like it was really bad, but the things that were dearest to me were imperiled. And at the same time, I was trying to convince people to go solar. And I thought, this is great. This is the easiest marketing challenge ever. Like, all I have to do is let people know that they can get solar panels and it won't cost them a lot of money. Then they'll find out about it and then they'll go, because who wouldn't want to do that? But it turns out that a lot of people don't want to do that, and not because they don't think solar is good. It's just, it's not top of mind for them. And, you know, it takes a lot of convincing, and quite frankly, it takes a lot of money for the solar companies to reach their target audience and convince them over the period of a couple months to get solar on their house and install it. Something bigger needs to happen on a more systematic level. And I started getting really curious about what that might be. That's kind of what ultimately led me to Citizens Climate. They had for me an answer that I hadn't seen anywhere else.
Before we get into the Citizens Climate core values, it may be helpful for listeners to better understand what makes Citizens Climate so unique. This show is a project of Citizens Climate Education. Another project is the annual Citizens Climate International Conference in D.C. every June. Citizens Climate Education seeks to empower individuals to educate elected officials, community leaders, and the general public about climate change and climate change solutions. Our consistently respectful, nonpartisan approach to climate education is designed to create a broad, sustainable foundation for climate action around the globe and with all political inclinations. So that's Citizens Climate Education. Many of our listeners are also involved with a group called Citizens Climate Lobby. They serve as volunteer lobbyists. Leslie describes what makes this group special.
Citizens Climate is a group with a real focus on solving climate change, and they have a specific proposal for how to do it, which is called Carbon Fee and Dividend, and I won't go into the details of it. Everything that they do and their volunteers do is in support of that. It's a focus on a solution with impact. The second thing I would say about it is it's organized very differently from most other groups that I've ever experienced. One of the main things that's different is that it's really volunteer-led. There's meant to be a group in every congressional district. They own the responsibility for getting their congressperson, whoever it is, to agree that this proposal is a good idea. It goes way beyond clicking on petitions. And, you know, there's all sorts of room for all sorts of sort of meaningful contributions by people that I think are really important. We work within the system, not from outside of the system. That's an important choice. And that's a decision that, you know, this organization has made. Through their engagement with their local congressperson over the years, they've really grown to respect and appreciate just how hard it is to do that job.
I definitely have experienced that. Building an ongoing cordial relationship with a congressional staff member has given me empathy and patience. Citizens Climate Lobby has identified six core values, and these can be helpful to climate advocates regardless of the group you're part of. The six core values are focus, optimism, relationships, integrity, personal power, and nonpartisan. Relationships and relationship building is very central to the work.
It comes sort of by way of understanding that participating in Citizens Climate is practice for how to be a more understanding, cooperative person in the world. You know, a listening first approach. So understanding that people come to their own opinions by legitimate means. You know, it's very easy for us to think of ourselves as complicated, thoroughly reasoned people and other people as very ideological and make decisions according to some ideology that isn't understood. It's a much more difficult thing to try and understand your own biases and see how that shapes how you think and feel, and then give that same understanding to other people. Rather than holding a sign and declaring your viewpoint on something, It's really having conversations with people and trying to understand where you share viewpoints and then building from there. The ability to follow that path and realize that that's actually the way that we can enact change is not by screaming at each other, but by understanding where there is shared ground and agreeing on things, that is ultimately what will get us to a solution. But doing so requires a lot of patience and a lot of optimism. So you need to find something to appreciate about other people and like in them. And that is what kind of binds us to each other. If we can't find those similarities and they are there, then we really don't have the basis for a relationship. You can't do anything by yourself, right? Like, part of it is sort of understanding your own personal limitations, but together we can do things. And so relationships as a foundation for everything that gets done, I think, is really right on.
Of the six core values, personal power at first seemed the oddest to me. It almost sounded like a self-help term. Become a better human. Increase your personal power. Here is how they describe personal power on the Citizens Climate Lobby website. We use our voices to be heard. This simple act transforms us from spectators to engaged citizens, and it reveals the true nature of democracy to us. We are volunteer-driven, trusting volunteers to make important decisions and to create and develop things that will be valued by Citizens Climate Lobby. In other words, Citizens Climate Lobby is encouraging leadership. And this makes a lot of sense with climate change. It's a huge issue. There are many ways to approach it. We need lots of people engaged in the work on all levels. Integrity is another important core value for Citizens Climate Lobby. The group is very research-driven. With her own marketing research background, Leslie finds this value to be essential in climate work.
One of the things that I think attracts a lot of people is that the solution has been vetted by experts. So the leading minds on this have weighed in and, you know, agree that this is a good idea. And that's a really important thing. And, you know, one of the things that Citizens Climate says is if the science changes or, you know, the consensus on what the best thing to do changes, then we will also change. So it's a commitment to accepting input from experts on this topic.
Citizens Climate Lobby maintains a laser-like focus on its goal, a national carbon fee. So that we can be effective, we don't let ourselves get distracted by work that does not support our core purpose. After we accomplish our goal, we will tackle the next most impactful solution. This approach is not for everyone. But by keeping focused on the goal of a national carbon fee, CCL volunteers can discern where they are needed most. I asked Leslie, which of the six core values are most challenging for her? She confessed, it's optimism. And I agree. This one takes faith in others. This is how optimism is explained in the CCL core values. It's a pretty outrageous claim and a powerful declaration. We believe that people are good and that democracy works. We are confident that our approach will work because we see progress. We stand for a solution, not in protest of other solutions. We don't expect perfection from ourselves or others. This is a process, and we know that people can improve. Together, we are a community that offers one another comfort, support, and fun as we work. Marshall Saunders, the founder of Citizens Climate Lobby, is someone brimming with optimism. I spoke with him just days after the November 2016 U.S. presidential election. Most climate advocates I met at that time were worried, but Marshall had a decidedly upbeat tone.
I think we could have some kind of a big breakthrough. You know, I don't see where it's coming from or if it's going to come, but I think that it's certainly possible.
A big breakthrough? Really? From every indication, it appears the U.S. elected a very anti-climate action government. How on earth could a breakthrough happen?
Yeah, I'm afraid to say it almost, but I almost feel, I would say I do feel the opposite. If Mrs. Clinton had won the election, we would have had the same old resistance in Congress, and they might let her get a few inches ahead and push this and that program forward. But essentially, we would be back in the same political soup that we've been in for a long time. Now, the Republicans take over, and they control the House, the Senate, and the executive branch, and the responsibility for climate change is going to be with them. And I think that could help people to awaken the responsibility of it could help people to awaken.
This sort of awakening doesn't happen in a bubble. It takes consistent work, dedication, discipline, and strategy. The kind of work that you do as a climate advocate. It's easy to feel overwhelmed, to get discouraged. But every time you speak up about climate change, every time you connect with the public or a lawmaker about it, you are doing essential groundwork.
A lot of groundwork. And some things do come all of a sudden.
We're like gardeners, tilling the soil, planting the seeds, carefully tending to the first shoots, responding to changing conditions. In our climate advocacy, may we bear much fruit. Special thanks to Leslie and Marshall for chatting about values. You can read the CCL core values if you visit citizensclimatelobby.org. Click on the About menu option. There you will see a link to the core values. Now it is time for the Art House. When I spoke with Marshall Saunders, we talked about the news. These days, the screaming headlines come fast and furious. I asked Marshall if he had a recommendation for me. In addition to the news, what might I read that will help me in my climate advocacy? I expected he would suggest something by a climate scientist or a communicator. Instead, he pointed me to a Russian novelist who was born in 1828. He told me about Lev Nikolaevich Tolstoy.
And I remember that Tolstoy wrote his last book when he was 68. It was called Resurrection. We talk about transformative experiences, and the main character, Nekhludov, I guess that's how you say it, had a transformational experience. And so I would recommend Resurrection by Tolstoy.
Leo Tolstoy, the author of War and Peace and Anna Karenina, published Resurrection in 1899. It is perhaps his most philosophical work. Tolstoy explores the complex human condition. The novel grapples with questions about good and evil and character. So I've taken Marshall's recommendation seriously and checked out the book. The main character, Dmitry Ivanovich Nekhludov, is suddenly reminded of his past and the missteps he took that injured others. He is looking for redemption. The language in the novel is beautiful, and the insights are profound. So I want to share with you some quotes from Tolstoy's Resurrection. And to read these quotes, I invited Glenn Retief, a memoirist originally from South Africa. Glenn now teaches at Susquehanna University. He is also my husband, so it was easy to get him in the studio to read these excerpts from Tolstoy's Resurrection. Thank you.
During that summer, Nekudrov experienced that exaltation which youth comes to know not by the teaching of others, but when it naturally begins to recognize the beauty and importance of life, and man's serious place in it. When it sees the possibility of infinite perfection of which the world is capable, and devotes itself to that endeavor, not only with the hope, but with a full conviction of reaching that perfection which it imagines possible. One of the commonest and most generally accepted delusions is that every man can be qualified in some particular way. Said to be kind, wicked, stupid, energetic, apathetic, and so on. People are not like that. We may say of a man that he is more often kind than cruel, more often wise than stupid, more often energetic than apathetic, or vice versa. But it could never be true to say of one man that he is kind or wise, and of another that he is wicked or stupid. Yet we are always classifying mankind in this way, and it is wrong. Human beings are like rivers. The water is one and the same in all of them, but every river is narrow in some places, flows swifter in others. Here it is broad, there still, or clear, or cold, or muddy, or warm. It is the same with man. Every man bears within him the germs of every human quality, and now manifests one, now another, and frequently is quite unlike himself, while still remaining the same man. Though men in their hundreds of thousands had tried their hardest to disfigure that little corner of the earth, where they had crowded themselves together, paving the ground with stones so that nothing could grow, weeding out every blade of vegetation, filling the air with the fumes of coal and gas, cutting down trees and driving away every beast and every bird. Spring, however, was still warm, even in the town. The sun shone warm, the grass, wherever it had not been scraped away, revived and showed green, not only on the narrow strips of lawn on the boulevards, but between the paving stones as well, and the birches, the poplars, and the wild cherry trees were unfolding their sticky, fragrant leaves, and the swelling buds were bursting on the lime trees. The jackdaws, the sparrows, and the pigeons were cheerfully getting their nests ready for the spring, and the flies, warmed by the sunshine, buzzed gaily along the walls. All were happy, plants, birds, insects, and children. But grown-up people, adult men and women, never left off cheating and tormenting themselves and one another. It was not the spring morning which they considered sacred and important, not the beauty of God's world given to all creatures to enjoy, a beauty which inclines the heart to peace, to harmony, and to love. No, what they considered sacred and important were their own devices for wielding power over each other. The whole trouble lies in that people think they are conditions excluding the necessity of love in their intercourse with man. But such conditions do not exist. Things may be treated without love. One may chop wood, make bricks, forge iron without love. But one can no more deal with people without love than one can handle bees without care.
Thank you, Glenn, for reading those excerpts from Tolstoy's Resurrection. If you have an idea for the Art House, please feel free to contact me. I'm interested in musicians and all sorts of artists, writers. Just email me, radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. And before we end this episode, we have our Citizens Climate Puzzler question. Last month, you were talking to Barbara. Because of you, Barbara now sees climate change as a serious issue that needs her attention. Barbara then asked you an important question. What should I do next? This is the question climate communicators long to hear. So what do you say when someone wants to know more about climate change? What are resources that you point people to? I received a bunch of answers to this one. I will make sure to post them all in the show notes. I'll give you the information of how to get that at the end of the show. So, Who do we hear from? Sarah Jenkins in Paris, Ontario wrote, quote, "If Barbara is a Christian, I recommend she read Creation, Crisis, Preaching, Ecology, Theology, and the Pulpit by Leah D. Shade. Also check out Young Evangelicals for Climate Action." Tandy Tinubu in Johannesburg, South Africa emailed. She suggested Philip Squarzone's graphic novel, Climate Change, A Personal Journey Through Science. And I agree. I have seen this graphic novel and I've read it and it's very good, very clear, and you get a lot of good science in it. And if you like graphic novels, I suggest AD, New Orleans After the Deluge by Josh Newfield. In addition to the emails, I also received some voice memos from listeners. Ron Dries from West Houston, Texas, left this message.
I'm calling to recommend a source of climate change information. It is called Climate Change, Evidence, Impacts, and Choices. It is published by the National Research Council of the National Academies, and it explains climate change in 24 pages. No, it's not technical. No, actually 36 pages. But it explains the evidence for human-caused climate change, warming climate changes and impacts in the 21st century and beyond, and making climate choices. And it's kind of a climate change primer. The book is $1 from the National Research Council. When I ordered 6 copies, I got them for 90 cents each. It's readable and speaks to what climate change is and why it's happening and so forth.
And Sid Madison from Piscataway, New Jersey, outlines what he would say to Barbara.
Barbara, there are 3 areas that I usually cover about climate change: science, consequences, and solutions, SCS. It seems to me that you understand the science and the consequences, so we should talk about solutions. With solutions, there are 3 areas that I usually cover. 1, effective action needs to be collective. 2, a carbon tax is the most important action. And 3, Citizens Climate Lobby is a collective action to pass a national carbon tax. A good primer on the need for collective action is a short op-ed that appeared in the New York Times in September 2011 titled Going Green But Getting Nowhere. You can find it on the internet. There are many sources that call for a carbon tax as the most important single action to take against climate change. George Mankiw, a Harvard professor of economics, conservative, and former advisor to Bush and Romney, said, "A carbon tax is as close to a silver bullet as there is." The third key to a solution is Citizens Climate Lobby. We are a collective with a single focus, a carbon tax, and importantly, we empower our members to lobby, something that most of them have not done. The dual approach of CCL, a single focus for a national carbon tax, and empowering our members is what makes CCL the best solution. To find out more about CCL, visit our website, citizensclimatelobby.org, and join a local chapter.
Thank you to everyone who responded to last month's puzzler. I apologize if I couldn't get your answer in, but keep sending your answers and I will eventually get yours on the show. Since I like podcasts so much, I would talk to Barbara about some of my favorite podcasts. Of course, I would tell her about Citizens Climate Radio, as I'm sure you tell all your friends. In addition, there are 3 climate podcasts I listen to regularly. One of them is called The Elephant Podcast. According to their website, theelephantpodcast.org, each episode explores a different story, angle, battleground, or facet of climate change through illuminating conversations with leaders, thinkers, experts, journalists, and scientists. From pipelines to oceans, from power to money, from Congress to economics, The Elephant is a unique exploration of climate change. And since you are a listener to Citizens Climate Radio, you may be interested in the most recent episode of The Elephant. It featured Citizens Climate Lobby. Barbara Lucas produced an excellent episode. She explores the question, can conservatives and progressives agree on climate action? I also listen to a podcast called Our Warm Regards. This one offers amazing conversations with scientists and climate communicators talking about the issues. I love both how passionate and pragmatic they are when talking about controversial issues. No Place Like Home is a podcast that offers conversations between two friends, Mary Ann Hitt and Anna Jane Joyner. Their perspectives as women, people of faith, and engaged, concerned citizens mixes the personal with climate solutions, and they always have very good guests on. Oh, and there's a brand new podcast out there called Terrestrial. I just started listening, and it is terrific. Terrestrial explores the choices we make in a world we have changed. Host Ashley Ahern travels the USA to bring listeners stories about people making personal choices in the face of environmental change. The first episode that I heard explores eco-anxiety, or climate change-induced grief. Very, very powerful. All of these podcasts are available at iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Let me tell you the names of the podcast again. The Elephant Podcast, Our Warm Regards, No Place Like Home, and Terrestrial. I have notes and links in the episode 12 post to all of these podcasts and to the resources Sarah, Tandy, Ron, and Sid shared. You can find episode 12 notes at ccl.podbean.com. or visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog. I'll give that information again at the end of the show. So, are you ready for our new puzzler? You are at a family event. Everyone is catching up. They're having a good time. You have cornered your uncle and are updating him about your climate work. Your uncle, let's call him Jim, says, okay, maybe this is a stupid question, but what's the big deal with melting glaciers? It seems every time I read something about climate change, they're freaking out about these glaciers. Why the obsession? So, how do you respond to Uncle Jim? In addition to the science behind glacial melting, what will you say to deepen the conversation? Send me your answers. Leave your name, contact info, and where you're from. You can get back to me by June 15th, 2017. If you see me at the Citizens Climate International Conference, June 11th and 12th, I could record your answer then. Right? It's not a bad idea. Or you can email your answers to radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. You can also text me or leave a voicemail of 3 minutes or less at 570-483-8194, plus one if calling from outside the USA. That number again is 570-483-8194. Thank you for listening to Citizens Climate Radio. The show is written and produced by me, Peterson Toscano. We had audio technical assistance from Chris Palucci and Eric Scott at MediaVolution. Other technical support from Ricky Bradley. Social media assistance from Ashley Hunt Monterano and Steve Volk. Moral support from Madeline Pera. All of the music we use on the show is licensed unless otherwise specified. Special music for the Art House segment includes One Suite from the free 1920s collection on archive.org. Please share Citizens Climate Radio with your friends. Pretty please? Just look for Citizens Climate Lobby on iTunes, Podbean, and Stitcher Radio. You can also listen at northernspiritradio.org. We have a special Facebook group page as well. Join us at facebook.com/groups/citizensclimateradio. And you can follow us on Twitter at Citizens C Radio. That's Citizens, the letter C, Radio. Citizens C Radio. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog to see info about our puzzler and find links to the resources we mention in today's show. That's citizensclimatelobby.org/blog. Another way to see the show notes to this episode is if you go to the site ccl.podbean.com. On the right, you'll see Citizens Climate Radio listed under categories. That's ccl.podbean.com. Bean, like red bean bun. Citizens Climate Radio is a project of Citizens Climate Education.